This episode is made possible by Walmart Connect. If you expect your media investment to deliver clear, measurable results, Walmart Connect can help you get there with powerful analytics and the reach of America's number one retailer. Their closed-loop measurement uses Walmart's proprietary customer purchase data to track the impact of your campaign on sales, not just on Walmart's site and app, but also in store. For some campaigns, they can even provide rest of market data that tracks the impact on sales at other retailers. Visit WalmartConnect.com today and see how they can help make your media spend meaningful. Walmart Connect, more than media, meaningful connections.
We just saw Rock Health data, their market research database for digital health. 40% of all funding into digital health startups in Q1 of this year went to AI-powered companies. So 40% of all investment dollars went to AI-powered companies in Q1. That's pretty significant.
Hey gang, it's Tuesday, April 16th. Somehow, Rajiv and listeners, welcome to the Behind the Numbers Daily, an e-marketer podcast made possible by Walmart Connect. I'm Marcus, and I'm joined by our senior analyst covering everything digital health, based in New Jersey. It's Rajiv Leventhal.
Hey, Marcus. Good to be on again. How are you?
Hey, fella. Yeah, good. Very good, sir. Welcome back for day two. Today, we're talking in part two about how physicians are using Gen AI. But we start, of course, with today's fact. Where did the grandfather clock get its name? Well, they were first invented over 350 years ago, originally called pendulum clocks. Drawing upon Galileo Galilei's research, Dutch astronomer Christiaan Huygens built the very first pendulum-driven clock at some point around the year of 1657, notes How Stuff Works. Over time, clockmakers started installing longer pendulums, which required longer cases. In turn, they went from pendulum clocks to being called long-case clocks, until Connecticut-born Henry Clay Work wrote a song called Grandfather's Clock. There's conflicting stories as to the inspiration. His family says that it's a clock that they had in the house. There's also a story that he traveled to North Yorkshire in England, and there was a clock in the lobby that he wrote the song about, but had a very mysterious background. But anyway, he wrote this song called Grandfather's Clock over a period of 4 years, which emerged as an instant classic, selling close to 1 million copies, which is a lot. Because in 1830, according to the US Census, there were 13 million people in the whole country. So that's 8% of everyone in the country bought his records. So a million copies is pretty impressive. But that's why it was so popular. That's why they call them grandfather clocks.
Are grandfather clocks making a comeback? They're vintage.
Maybe.
I think they should.
Kind of want one now. Anyway, today's real topic. How physicians are using Gen AI, and would you be willing to have primary care delivered in a large photo booth? Answer? Maybe. Today's episode is the second of a two-part series on Gen AI and healthcare. In yesterday's part one, me and Rajiv talked about how and why patients are using Gen AI for their healthcare, how physicians feel about them doing so. And today, we're talking about doctors using Gen AI when it comes to patient care. But first, Rajiv, I want to give the same disclaimer as I gave yesterday. OpenAI, which makes ChatGPT, which is a generative AI system, says the company's models are not fine-tuned to provide medical information, and the company cautions against using the models to provide diagnostic or treatment services for serious medical conditions, the company continuing to research the issue. So with that said, Rajiv, how are doctors using Gen AI when it comes to patient care?
Yeah, the disclaimer is a good lead into our conversation because most clinicians are not using it to drive treatment decisions or make diagnoses yet. It's really being invested at the broader health system level for lower stakes back office tasks, included related to like medical documentation, recording and capturing a visit with a patient, and then being able to more efficiently and speed up the process of submitting that documentation to insurers for payment, answering patients' questions through the portal, drafting, you know, automated generated responses. Those types of administrative tasks are where we're seeing the highest utilization amongst physicians and health systems right now.
Yeah. Yeah, there was some research from Medscape from October of last year, and it points to exactly that. I'm going to skip number one and come back to it, because number two is electronic health records, office administrative tasks, a third, patient scheduling, staff scheduling is fourth and fifth, patient communications is sixth, etc. And they're very low percentages. We're talking 7-10% of physicians are using AI in those different areas. But number one was researching conditions, which was 13%. So how is that working? Is it kind of using it as an assistant that the hospital knows about and has told them they're able to, or do you think they're using it kind of all individually?
Yeah, I would say independently, because
that's the word.
Yeah, it's another tool to be able to provide information on medical conditions or symptoms. You know, doctors are experts, but they don't have the answer to every question. So they need assistance too. And, you know, some of these Gen AI tools are able to provide that. But that does get into the situation of liability, medical liability. Doctors are fearful of this going back decades, but now you add in kind of another element to that. You don't want to treat a patient based on wrong information and then be held liable for that. So I would imagine that, you know, maybe their research is just being used to affirm or support what their analysis or conclusion of what a patient's symptoms or condition was. I don't think it would be used to drive that decision.
Right. Okay. As you said, it is being used for a lot of admin, help with a lot of admin, drafting medical documents, summarizing patient histories. And that's because there's a huge burden on clinicians and a huge reason why physicians are becoming so burned out. And there was some research looking at US mental health care workers. Over half of US mental health care workers say admin has contributed to their burnout, according to Simple Practice's 2023 State of Therapist Wellbeing Report. And The Economist pointing out that admin accounted for about 30% of America's excess healthcare costs versus other countries' numbers. So nearly a third of the healthcare costs in America going to admin. So it could definitely use some help.
And I think the study showed about a third or a quarter of the waste in healthcare is due to admin costs, said that most of that, a lot of it can be removed by using technology and automating processes. Mm. And, you know, we see every year clinicians across all specialties, when they're asked if they're burned out and what contributes to their burnout, it's spending too much time on bureaucratic administrative tasks. Mm-hmm. And this is where AI, I think, is kind of the perfect solution, especially at this stage, to relieve some of that burden on them.
Yeah. Another way they're using, physicians using AI, is to help prep for a patient before they come in. Craig Lamott of NPR says some doctors hope to use AI to comb through and summarize a patient's medical history before an appointment so they can be prepped before they walk in. But Rajiv, how do patients feel about this, about doctors using generative AI for their healthcare?
I think patients are pretty skeptical of doctors relying on AI. It kind of goes back to what we were saying about physicians using it as a supportive tool, and even our first part of our podcast, that physicians don't want patients to rely on it too much. You flip it around, it's the same thing. We've seen some data showing that patients want it to be used in the background. If a patient goes into an appointment with a doctor and the doctor is using a medical scribe software tool to record the conversation for the physician's documentation purposes, I think patients are totally fine with that. But if a patient, again, finds out that a doctor arrived at a diagnosis and arrived at that conclusion based on what this AI tool told them, they're not comfortable with that at all.
Mm-hmm. So let me throw this at you, because there was a comment from Glenn Cohen, professor at Harvard Law School and faculty director of its Petri Flom Center for Health Law, Policy, Biotech, and Bioethics. And he was saying that patients have the right to be informed they're interacting with an AI chatbot, especially if they may think they are talking with an actual clinician. But then goes on to say, whether or not you have the right to know about all AI in your care is another matter. So give an example of, if you first look at an x-ray that was done by AI and reviewed by a radiologist, I'm not sure if a right of informed consent applies. When the AI is an adjunct to a decision, we are in a very different category than when a patient is interacting with an AI and has no idea. So where do you land on patients having the right to be informed when and how AI is being used?
Yeah, it's a fascinating question. I think I side on that transparency is always better than non-transparency. However, I think some good points were just made in the blurb that you read, because look, patients don't know what's going on behind the scenes when a radiologist is analyzing a medical image, right? They don't know. And to be honest, they probably don't care. They just want to get healthier and they want the most accurate information. But then that brings up another kind of a dilemma. There are some health systems that are starting through an external vendor service. They're starting to charge patients to get their interpretation of their medical imaging with AI being used. So you have two options. You can get your regular image analysis, or you can get
upgrade
it
to
the one that's produced by AI. Because look, this is where AI can, you know, scan and read and interpret much faster than humans. That's just the way it is, right? Mm-hmm. So if patients want that kind of extra layer, then very few, but some are starting to charge for it. Jeez. And, you know, that just brings up a whole other, you know, fascinating controversy on if you should have to pay for that type of expedited service.
Yeah. X-ray premium.
Yeah, different tiers.
Jeez. You did have a survey, though, that you cited in one of your articles. 83% of patients say their physician should let them know when they are using Gen AI for support or treatment. That was according to a 2023 Deloitte survey. Let's move to whether or not Gen AI is like a stethoscope. So Dr. Mark Tsuchi of Mass General Brigham says AI will ultimately prove to be a trusted medical tool, saying, quote, AI won't replace doctors, but doctors who use AI will replace doctors who do not, saying it's the equivalent to writing an article on a typewriter or writing it on a computer, close quotes. Do you agree that Gen AI will be like a stethoscope?
I agree and disagree. I agree that doctors will have to embrace AI more so than AI will replace them. But look, a manual stethoscope is an FDA certified device.
Right.
And this gets into the regulation. If these AI tools eventually get FDA authorization, then yeah, I could see the comparison to a stethoscope. Mm-hmm. But as of now, that's not happening. And I think it's another big issue that the industry needs to address. The FDA is in charge of regulating medical devices. But healthcare AI tools sort of fall in a gray area. The FDA came out a few months ago and said, look, this tech is advancing way too fast. We would have to double in size and gain new legal authority to conduct all of these evaluations and assessments for all of these different healthcare AI tools that are being developed and used. And it's funny, when you bring up a stethoscope, an AI-powered stethoscope actually got FDA approval. We wrote about that a few weeks ago. And that was the first one, is to detect heart failures.
Interesting.
But look, a stethoscope is used, what, to help a physician hear abnormalities for your heart and your lungs. If an AI can go through the proper certification and validation to prove that it can perform those functions, and sure, but until then, it can't be compared just yet.
Yeah. Yeah. If it can do it to the standard and better, arguably, you know, is it able to pick up on more things? Is it able to take that information and log it straight away so you have a record of every time that doctors use a stethoscope? Then yes. But for now, not so much. Let's finally move at the end of this episode to what companies are starting to build when it comes to AI solutions for the healthcare industry. I'll throw one at you first. This is from the UK. So one is about predicting risk. Bea Swallow of the BBC gave this example. Brave AI is a pilot scheme where the NHS, which is the National Health Service, universal healthcare in the UK, NHS Somerset, Somerset's a part of the country in the bottom left-hand corner. So NHS Somerset, beautiful part, partnered with the North Sedgemoor Primary Care Network to analyze data from over 500 care home residents. The AI software is to be used to predict if a patient is at risk to try and prevent the need for a hospital visit. And the results found the number of resident falls were reduced, for them falling was reduced by 35%, visits to emergency departments by 60%, and ambulance callouts by 9%. So it's trying to get rid of some of the waste, people calling them out because they think something's happening, but it's not actually happening. So that's one example of how AI, not generative, but AI in general, is helping to predict risk. What are some other ways that AI solutions are helping the healthcare industry?
Yeah, I was just going to say AI and predictive analytics to you being used to help predict an adverse event or risk. I think that's been going on for years. And I think it's a pretty good barometer of what's a successful use case in using AI for medical purposes. It's just unbelievable. We're seeing a bunch of startups, big tech companies, tech companies that are non-traditional in healthcare. They're just trying to get all in on this AI craze. And the biggest theme we're seeing is most of it is, again, helping health systems become more operationally efficient, whether that's Nuance, who's the leading medical scribe software company that's now owned by Microsoft. They're kind of the leader in that space. But then you have other companies such as Abridge and Nabla. These are all helping in the medical documentation automation space. And then you have Google developing their own Gen AI tools for healthcare and touting that they pass the medical licensing exam and that they're just as efficient as some clinicians and specialties. And then you have Epic, the leading electronic health record company, who's developing its own AI tool. Anybody who's getting in on here. There's one startup that we wrote about, a company called Hippocratic AI, that is being backed by a lot of heavy hitters in the private equity space. And it's interesting, I want to call them out because they were not shy in saying that basically we are creating a Gen AI nurse bot that, and I think they even wrote this, why hire a nurse for X amount of dollars when you can invest in our Gen AI nurse bot for $9 an hour? And they're just coming out and saying, like, we're not shy about promoting that we can replace nurses with our bot. Now, if you actually look into the details of what it does, it really kind of just like helps patients who have been discharged from the hospital answer questions about their follow-up and if they've taken their medications. It's really more of just
an Alexa device.
Yeah, and let nurses speak. Yeah. Focus more on clinical care. Exactly. Mm-hmm. But okay. Still, it's just like, I think it's worth calling out because it shows how much of a competitive field this has become, developing health AI tools. We just saw Rock Health Data, their market research database for digital health. 40% of all funding into digital health startups in Q1 of this year went to AI-powered companies. So 40% of all investment dollars went to AI-powered companies in Q1. Hmm. That's pretty significant.
Yeah, it's one thing being replaced by technology in general. Being replaced by an actual robot is quite the other. Final thing I want to ask you about, something you wrote about as well. That's about AI helping with primary care. So Jennifer A. Kingston also wrote about this. She writes for Axios. And it's about a DIY health clinic in a box called CarePod being used for traditional annual checkups. So she explains that Forward, which is a tech-focused healthcare provider, they have a giant photo booth-sized CarePod that can be accessed by folks paying its $99 a month membership. Patients can use their phone to unlock the door. They go inside this big booth, they sit in the chair, and then they can run through a series of health apps that will do a biometric body scan, have your DNA sequenced if you're in the market for that, or test for hypertension, kidney disease, and heart issues, among other things. Forward is also looking to add services such as flu shots as well. And I think they can do blood samples, I believe, without using a needle. They use some other kind of technology to do that. But anyway, results are reviewed by doctors offsite, or you can talk to a doctor virtually whilst you're in the care pod. The first three can be found in California, Arizona, and Illinois. What's your take on these care pods?
This is pretty wild. Forward's a very buzzy technology healthcare company. Think about this from a patient perspective. Look, these little pods, care pods, I call them kiosks, whatever, they're putting them in malls, right? Yeah. And they will obviously want to be around a lot of foot traffic. But if I'm a patient and I'm, you know, shopping at a store, am I going to want to go into this AI powered doctor's office and press a couple of buttons and hit an app and see if they can assess like hypertension or get a screening for some other condition? I don't know. I get what Forward's trying to do. They're trying to be very, very innovative and ahead of the curve. But I have my doubts if consumers are going to accept the idea of an AI-powered doctor's office.
Yeah.
There's a host, right, that lets you in and helps you work the apps, but there's only doctor is virtually in a remote area. Yeah. So if there's not like a doctor physically there, I don't know. I'm skeptical that that's going to drive a lot of adoption.
So there's someone at the booth who helps walk you through it is what you're saying.
Yeah, but not a medical expert. Yeah, right. Just a host. Yeah.
I think you pointed this out. They've been a company Forward for 8 years, and it's not like their initial offer has taken off to any great degree. We just saw Amazon kind of take its Just Walk technology out of some of its stores because consumers weren't ready for that level of technology. And part of the reason is because survey from December 2022, Everyday Health and Castle Connolly, compassion, empathy, and active listening among the most important things that patients look for in a doctor. I think you might have cited that in one of your pieces. And so that's always going to be something that's missing. So maybe they won't want to access primary care this way. That said, two things. One, folks might be more comfortable with this than we think. In October 2022, 85% of US adults said virtual primary care was useful during the pandemic and that they plan on continuing to use it as the pandemic improves, according to Elevance Health. Now, that is virtual.
But that's telehealth. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah, that's telehealth, not getting primary care administered. And then the second thing here is it could help with access to primary care. Nearly 30% of patients don't see a primary care doctor these days, according to analysis by Fair Health. The number one reason for delaying seeking medical care, according to 40% of people, they said wait time for an appointment was too long, according to BDO. And you've cited this before, Rajiv. New patients deal with an average wait time of nearly 3 weeks to get an appointment with a family medicine doctor, according to 2022 survey from Merritt Hawkins. And that average, you point out, balloons to nearly a month when including other specialties. So maybe in terms of access, people will give it a try.
Yeah, look, I've been saying this for a long time. Patients crave more efficiency. They crave easier access, obviously lower costs, but they want all of those things with a human. That's all I'll say.
Yeah, yeah. The final thing I'll say is going to a doctor, sometimes it can be embarrassing. Sometimes people are a bit nervous to interact with a human and tell them the things that are going on with them. So maybe this gets around that to a certain extent.
Yeah, there is a stigma. It's a good point.
Right. I'm with you. The compassion, empathy, and active listening part is a huge reason why people go. So I don't know if these things are going to take off anytime soon. That is all we have time for this episode. Thank you so much, Rajiv, for hanging out with myself and the listeners for the last 2 days.
Thanks, Marcus. This was fun.
Yes, indeed. Thank you to Todd, who's going to be editing the show whilst Victoria is on vacation. Thank you to Stuart, who runs the team, and Sophie, who does our social media. And thanks to everyone for listening into the Behind the Numbers Daily, an eMarketer podcast made possible by Walmart Connect. You can tune in tomorrow to hang out with Sarah Lebo on the Reimagining Retail show, where she'll be speaking with analyst Sky Cannabis and David Morris all about how to make the point of sale more seamless.